Hey, Junkions, this episode is brought to you by Fun Size Horror, a free online platform for original and user-submitted horror shorts. Because if there's one thing horror fans know, it's that if we can't find good stuff in the theaters, we're going to take it in the shorts. If you're a filmmaker looking for a place to share your film and grow your audience, go to funsizehorror.com. Submitted films can be eligible for promotions, contests, and distribution. Follow Fun Size Horror on Twitter, at Fun Size Horror, and like them on Facebook, also at Fun Size Horror, conveniently enough. And stay up to date on the latest releases, contests, and promotions.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
And Altarians, and welcome to another not-so-hidden episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me, as per usual, is my friend and co-host, novelist, screenwriter, lieutenant of Megaforce, voted most likely to be an alien walking around in human form by his high school, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
I mean, to be fair, I was voted most likely to die at an all-you-can-eat buffalo wing contest. So, you know, the jury's still out on that. But what the jury is not out on is that you can find us on social media. That's right. At Junk Food Cinema on Twitter. And the podcast is on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher. Guys, please do me this favor. I know it's weird. I know that I don't understand the algorithms that iTunes uses for its top 150 in every category. I feel like we should be there. I look at the TV and film category, and literally there are podcasts that are defunct. There are podcasts that are wrap-up shows for television shows that nobody likes, like Iron Fist, that are way up on that list and don't have as many positive reviews as our show has. Makes no sense to me. Drives me a little up the wall. So please go to iTunes, rate and review us, 5 stars. If you would like to leave a favorable review, we've got a lot of new ones recently that were very kind. Thank you very much for that. But definitely do that. And if you really like us, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema is a great way to pitch in directly and keep the lights on here. Moving into the summer, we actually have quite a bit of new content that I am producing just for patrons. So this is a really great time to jump on that bandwagon.
Last week we recorded two for patrons.
Two.
We ended up putting one up for everyone, which you guys may have heard, where we talked about, you know,
Shazam. In the words of Rick Moranis, fooled you.
Yeah.
It's not, not a real movie.
That was never even my intent. That's the thing that kills me.
Yeah, that's,
I thought this will be hilarious.
Because everybody will be in on the joke, but I got plenty of responses on Facebook that said, yeah, I had no idea this wasn't a real movie.
Did we keep in the bit where we said April Fools at the end?
I don't remember if I clipped that or not. I did put I Dream of Jeannie's blink noise at the end of it. I'm not sure where that fell in, but yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that we do, is we do extra reviews, mostly for movies that do exist. I guess I should say, as the caveat, is 99.9% of the extra reviews we do for patrons are of movies that do exist. Mailbags, a lot of extra great stuff that you guys...
Junk food a la mode.
Junk food a la mode.
Movies that you can go see in the theaters now. Absolutely. That we believe are going to be future alums.
And one of the things about Patreon is that at the highest level, you actually get to request a movie for us to review, and that is exactly what's happening today.
This is why we're laying it thick on the Patreon aspect today, because this is a Patreon episode. This episode exists because we have a kind junkie on, as we call them, who has been giving to the show, keeping the lights on, making sure that Brian can take the time to do this and doesn't have to get a second job.
This is my second job.
This is your second job now. No, you used to have two jobs. And
I did.
We added Patreon, and then you got to act like a normal human being with only, you know, with one job that's doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that patron asked us.
That patron is Onslaughter and asked us, and I have to actually read you the message because I thought this was great. he recommended one movie and then sent us a message and said, "Hey guys, I'm very sorry to have to message you this after all this time, and I'm hoping it's not too late to ask you this, but I changed my mind about the movie that I wanted you guys to review because I just watched something fucking amazing with my old man, and I feel really fucking guilty not mentioning it to you guys before. So please, please, let me know." And I said, "Okay, well, what's the movie?" And he said, "The Hidden."
Something strange is happening to some ordinary people.
"Yeah, that's Jack. Real nice man. What did he do, rob a bank?"
"Killed 12 people, wounded 23 more, stole 6 cars, most of them Ferraris. If anybody deserves to go that way, sure in the hell's him."
"I've worked homicide for 13 years.
I have never seen anything like this.
I want answers, and I want them now."
"Explanation won't help you."
"I want to know why 3 law-abiding citizens all of a sudden go crazy and start killing people."
"We talking spacemen here?"
"Finds a body, gets inside, uses it to move around."
"Try for one of the tires. You think this is easy? Why don't you try?"
"I guess a career in the police didn't really prepare you for this, did it?"
The Hidden.
And I'm so glad that he did, because this is a movie that I saw for the first time at a Terror Tuesday at the Draft House and fell in love with immediately. 1987's The Hidden, directed by Jack Sholder, who is actually no stranger to junk food cinema. He directed a little film called Alone in the Dark.
Oh, yes.
That we covered quite a while ago. And he also directed the second installment of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
Yeah.
So this is a director that we know.
This guy is all up in early 80s New Line.
For sure.
Like this guy.
Yeah, that's true.
No. I mean, that's...
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's where, you know, Alone in the Dark was what, before they were like a proper studio and they're just a production company. And then by the time they got off the ground and really kind of took off, you know, he did, you know, Nightmare 2, and then he did this. And we'll get a little more into that as we go on. I found it interesting that he asked for The Hidden, and ordinarily, had you come to me and said, we should do an episode on The Hidden, I'd be like, maybe. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, that era, and, you know, if you're really into movies where cops team up with aliens to track down other aliens, this is my second favorite of those.
There it is. We can go ahead and put a pin in that discussion for a double feature coming up.
Yeah, because I absolutely love I Come in Peace.
I come in peace.
You go in pieces.
Which we've done an episode on, a.k.a. Dark Angel. That's the movie I have the T-shirt for.
I feel like...
I wear the T-shirt for I Come in Peace, so I feel like The Hidden is... Well, this is my second favorite cops teaming up with aliens movies.
Which is a narrow field, to be sure.
Yes.
So it's not deriding this movie to call it second best in that category, because it's a very narrow field. But I actually really, really love this movie, because where I Come in Peace is bombastic and 80s.
And hilarious.
And hilarious. This is going for something a little deeper and a little heavier that I feel like, yes, maybe it doesn't always hit that mark. But the fact that it's really trying to blend the worlds of cult cinema and legitimate science fiction, I love those moments. I love those moments of intersection, even if they're a little bit misguided. And The Hidden is a movie that begins, I mean, talking about coming out of the gate strong, and this movie begins with a shootout bank robbery, a static camera shot of a security cam in a bank. Everybody's coming and going. You see a guy enter wearing a trench coat who immediately just starts blowing people away, walks outside, climbs into a Ferrari, and leads the police on a spectacularly well-shot car chase to open this movie. Now, during this car chase, we break it up with scenes of a policeman interrogating the neighbors of this bank robber. Now, the policeman in question, Thomas Beck, is played by Michael Norrie, who I actually listened to the director's commentary, and one of the few things that I was able to glean from it is Jack Sholder referred to Michael Norrie as sort of the 80s version of Cary Grant, just having that sort of like effortless charm and being funny and being very present in every scene. And I started to see it. I was like, okay, yeah, no, I totally get that. And I really like Michael Norrie in this movie, but he's interrogating the neighbor of this bank robber. And the neighbor's like, oh, no, he's a really nice guy, very quiet. Like, you're not going to have any trouble from him. And he's like, well, what do you do, rob a bank? And then we cut right back to the car, right back to the chase. The cops are shooting at him. He is blowing through barricades, knocking people over. At one point, full, like, Death Race 2000 moment, he runs over a guy in a wheelchair as he's driving through the park, MacArthur Park. And so the cops end up finally being able to stop the vehicle. And he gets out and they just blow him the fuck away. Like, literally, the car goes up in flames and everything. And we learn that this guy all of a sudden went from mild-mannered citizen to
80s villain.
80s villain. In the span of, you know, moments. And we're trying to figure that out. We're trying to...
You know what he's acting like? What this pattern of behavior is? It's the villains from Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this guy is like an offshoot of the villains from Cobra.
He is the Night Stalker or one of the Night Stalkers. I never really understood the hierarchy of the group in Cobra. Is it they are collectively the Night Stalker, or is just Brian Johnson the Night Stalker and everybody else is just an underling? I never really fully grasped that. But as we go along, we realize there's something really fucking weird going on with this particular suspect. And enter into the fray FBI agent Lloyd Gallagher, played by Kyle MacLachlan.
Who my wife went halfway through the movie goes, you know, he looks and acts a lot like that guy from Twin Peaks. And I said, you mean Kyle MacLachlan? And she's like, yeah. And I said, yeah.
Yeah. A mere 2 years before he would be on Twin Peaks and really create the character that would define his whole career. And he plays a weirdo FBI agent in The Hidden.
But here's the thing, is that he aged a lot in those 2 years. Like, in
those
The Hidden.
Those are a hard couple of years.
He was still the baby-faced kid that we had seen a few years before. He was still baby-faced as fuck. And then the minute he pulls into Twin Peaks for a cup of coffee, he is like, all of a sudden, it was like he was in his 30s all of a sudden.
I feel like working with David Lynch will do that to you.
It's what's so weird is you watch this and he's just so baby-faced in this. He's just still a kid, and it's like so close to when he did Twin Peaks. It's very unsettling.
Yes. And speaking of unsettling, his performance in this movie from frame one, the moment he enters the proceedings, something is very off with him. And it's what's great about it is if you've seen any of Twin Peaks, you kind of write that off as that's just Kyle MacLachlan, which works retroactively in this movie's favor, because about by the end of the first act, you've figured out the big twist. And I'll go ahead. Spoiler alert, guys. Spoiler alert. He's an alien. Like it, and I know that seems weird that we're less than 10 minutes into the episode and I'm already, you know, spoiling that for you.
It's obvious?
In
everything point of copy about this movie. And it's why you watch this movie. Like, literally, this is a movie that why would I want to watch a movie about two cops tracking down a string of killers and spree killers, that nobody really ever talks about? Why would I want to watch that movie? It's like, because this is the movie about an alien running around in human bodies and being tracked by another alien, and he teams up with a cop.
Yes. So again, a lot like I Come in Peace. There's a lot of similarities between those two movies. What I find interesting, though, is that when you're talking about him being an alien in this movie, is it reminds me a lot of, if you've ever seen the Mystery Science Theater movie, which was This Island Earth,
they butchered.
It's a fucking bad movie, guys. Get over it. But yes, it is. But there's a running gag throughout that episode where Exeter and Brack are so obviously aliens, and they say things like, oh, yes, your composer Mozart. And the robots and Mike are always like, oh, I'm not an alien. That's Kyle MacLachlan in this movie. He is doing things that are so weird that they might as well be accompanied by the phrase, oh, but I'm not an alien. Like, he goes over to dinner his partner's house, and she's like, where are you from? And he just points up at the sky, and I'm like, yeah, I saw that scene in E.T. when he was pointing at the atlas on the wall, and it's like, yeah, no, I get it. You're an alien.
But yes, but that scene in particular is really great, and very they undersell it. Like, they don't push too hard on it. It's one of the things I do really respect about this movie is there's a lot going on in terms of the alien stuff, and they're never saying it out loud. And in this case, his alien physiology is interacting with alcohol and not interacting well with it. He's only had a few sips of beer, and he's very loopy, and he ends up passing out after dinner. He's having a weird reaction to it. And so he starts being much more honest and much less controlled and saying weird things because he's gotten instantly drunk off the alcohol.
It's something we obviously can't relate to here at Junk Food Cinema is just getting instantly drunk and not saying what you mean. That's something we've never encountered, so it's a little alien to us as well.
We have this thing called tolerance.
Right. Yeah, we've been cross-training for this for a long time. But going back to the plot for a second, so we have somehow this moment at the end of the car chase just reminded me of Miami Vice, because the suspect gets out of the car. He's not holding his weapon anymore. He's just kind of standing by the car, and the cops just open fire on him. It just reminded me of like Crockett coming into a room, shooting six drug dealers, and then going, "Miami Vice, freeze." It's like, well, you shot him first. You don't need to say that now. So they literally light this guy up. He's in the hospital, somehow still alive. And then we see him rise up and go over to the patient in the next bed who is suffering from ulcerative colitis or something, some bad stomach condition where he's very immobile. And we see a Kmart version of Rob Bottin's effects come out of the suspect's mouth and into this old man's mouth. This slug looking, and I swear to, and I say Rob Bottin because they're ripping sound effects directly from the thing and tentacles coming out of the mouth, and then this literal slug is going, and it's actually a really fucking cool effect.
Yes, it really, like, that's the thing, is what sells you on the rest of this movie and what allows you to buy into the sci-fi of this movie is the few moments that we see the slug creature, because the rest of the movie is really just actors walking around like they're fucking high and doing evil, crazy shit. Like, that's what the bulk of the movie is.
Yes.
And we have 80s cops tracking them down, hitting all the 80s tropes along the way.
So many of them.
Complaining about paperwork, the brutish asshole captain.
And their investigation inevitably leading them to a strip club.
A strip club.
That's the other big 80. And in fact, happens.
But a terrible strip club where nobody ever takes their clothes off.
Because it's an 80s cop movie. Like, that shit. It's like the caliber of star that you have playing the stripper is inversely proportional to the number of clothes that she will take off. I direct you to Terry Hatcher in Tango
Cash.
This is my concern, dude. But yes, you're right. The effects really do sell that. And from that point on, what we realize is that these people who all of a sudden snap and were previously completely upstanding citizens are being inhabited by this alien that immediately makes them listen to rock music, steal fast cars, go after women that they like, and kill everything that gets in their path. And what I really like about this conceit is that it gives different actors the chance to play kind of the same character. And it's interesting to watch each actor's interpretation of what this alien is, because they all must have gotten together and been like, okay, so how do you guys see this alien? Because you see them really adhering to the physicality of the first person that we see inhabited, like the little tongue thing.
Yeah,
that they all do is a really great like exercise in consistency, and it's a lot of fun to watch that. And my favorite actually is the second guy who gets infected by the alien, who was the patient suffering from the colitis. He has this moment at a Ferrari dealership where he's just like,
"I want this car,"
and it's like in the process of being sold. And because it's the 80s. God damn, I love 80s movies. The Ferrari dealership, when you go in to sign the paperwork to buy your new Ferrari, there's coke waiting for you. You get to do coke with the dealer, who, by the way,
when he says coke.
Cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cocaine. I'm not talking about New Coke. I'm not talking about Coke 2. I'm not talking about Diet Coke. I'm talking about the cocaine. Joel Silver Express. But
wait, you got to do the impression.
I bought a Ferrari. I bought a Ferrari. I bought it for the very well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got five of them now. I got five Ferraris. Who do you think in our world, if we were in charge of this movie, who would be playing that car dealer? What actor would be playing that sleazy Ferrari dealer?
I have no idea who you have in your
mind. Patron saint of junk food cinema himself.
Oh, Dick Miller.
Dick Miller. Yeah. And I thought that while I was watching it, and I watched it once, and then I went back and watched it with the audio commentary, and someone in that room said, oh, this should have been played by Dick Miller. And I was like, that's what I fucking said!
It should have been a Dick Miller role.
That's although, a Dick Miller role for the taking.
It's funny, though, there's another small cameo in that scene.
That also. Oh, in that scene, okay.
Yeah, in that scene where the when he wants the car, he goes to take the car and the car dealer is busy, you know, signing paperwork and getting the guy to do lines of coke while he's buying the car.
I think and when so you're talking about movies, it's called running lines.
He sends out his bouncer or whatever this guy is.
Yeah.
And the bouncer, of course, is the kid from summer school who leaves at the beginning of summer school.
Wow.
And says, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then comes back 6 weeks later and aces the test. And he walks back in and Mark Harmon's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm in this class. Where have you been? And he's like, bathroom.
Guys.
And so it's this guy. And so I literally just showed this movie to my my wife last weekend because I'm going to be doing a live reading of it in Chattanooga. And
so that's actor Dwayne Davis. And I hope you've got your summer school bingo cards handy, listeners, so that you can mark Dwayne Davis off of that list.
Yeah.
Good job. Circle gets the square.
But yeah, it's that scene is particularly it's interesting watching how that guy plays that.
Yeah.
But what I love about that whole conceit about this whole thing is that they never really explain it. They're just kind of write it off like, well, he really likes fast cars, you know, likes loud music, but he also likes eating. The thing is that he is an alien that inhabits all different races of aliens, and some of them he hates. Like this last planet he was on, he fucking hated those aliens.
Yeah.
But he likes being human. He likes the sensations. He likes the sounds. He likes how we perceive the universe. And that's all very subtly written. They never lay it out for you. But that's what's so cool about this is this guy is just fucking having a grand old time gallivanting around the universe and has finally found a planet where he's like, yeah, this fucking place rocks. These people know how to fucking party.
Well, and the other thing it is that this movie is one of those real lightning in a bottle type of moments where they're playing into the zeitgeist of the time when this movie is made. It's not just that he likes being human. It's that he is figuring out what it means to be human in the 80s in America.
Oh, yeah.
And that is why you have an alien who is attracted to excess. You have an alien who literally, I have never seen a movie, maybe short of Trick or Treat, that pins a lot of blame for violence and death on rock and roll music, because every scene that this alien is inhabiting somebody, he is fucking banging out to some really shitty, this is what we could afford rock music.
Yeah.
But some of it's heavy metal, and he's fucking loving every second of it.
The rock posters in this movie are of much better bands than what they could afford on the soundtrack.
You see a poster for IRS Records. You're like, nobody signed to IRS Records is on this soundtrack. Who are you trying to kid? Come on. But it literally, there's a scene where he's in a diner and he's eating a steak and he's just got his ghetto blaster up as loud as it'll go. And it's funny because he's inhabiting the body of this older man. And it's like, he's just trying to figure out the physicality of headbanging. But he's also he loves Ferraris and Lamborghinis. He's really it's kind of like if an alien came down and decided it wanted to be a teenage boy. That's what's going on here. But what I love about it is that's what makes this movie so definitively 80s, is that the alien isn't just trying to figure out what it means to be human. The alien is trying to figure out what it means to be a human in the 80s. One of the most categorically excessive times in American history. I will point you once again back to doing cocaine in a car dealership.
Yeah.
Like, this is the kind of excess we're talking about, and that's what the alien is all about. There's a moment in this movie where he gets up at a diner and tries to chase on foot a Ferrari, like he's playing Grand Theft Auto, just like running down the street trying to catch up with this Ferrari. And what's great about that moment is he has to stop and realize that the body he's inhabited has limits. And you can see the frustration on this thing's face where it's like, shit, I can't run up to this car. Like, whatever body I'm in is broken down. I need to get something newer. And, I mean, that's a big part of this movie, too. It's kind of, you know, we mentioned I Come in Peace, but it's also playing on a couple of other different sci-fi classics, not the least of which being The Thing. Because, I mean, you do have that element of this thing transferring from person to person. The difference being that it's not really hiding once it's inside. If it was The Thing, as soon as it got inside this guy, it would have just played it cool until the end of the movie. This is a different version of the alien from The Thing that once it's inside, I don't know, Windows is going to go on a coked out, you know, crime spree and not giving a shit that it's obvious something is wrong. So we have the two cops played by Kyle MacLachlan and Michael Nouri, who are hot on the trail and trying to figure out. We learn that FBI agent Lloyd Gallagher, played by Kyle MacLachlan, his partner, his wife, and his daughter were all killed by what he initially thinks is the guy at the beginning of the movie, or what is initially sold, I should say, because MacLachlan knows exactly what the fuck is going on because he's also an alien. So what we do is we watch him kind of follow the trail of possession from one person to another. And was that a joke? I didn't even realize
trail of possession.
Trail of possession. Oh well, yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about like chain of custody. I'm talking about trail of possession, which is literally what's happening here. By the way, played the lieutenant of this police station, played by
Clue Gulager.
This movie's actually full of
there's some
junk food cinema.
There's a half dozen of our favorites in this movie that just walk on for like Clue Gulager's barely in this movie.
He is, but he makes his presence felt. Some people walk on, some people dance on. Which once this guy who is inhabited by the alien gets to a strip club, we are introduced to the stripper Brenda, played by Claudia Christian from Maniac Cop 2.
Yeah.
What?
During a shootout scene, when the alien attacks later in the movie, we have a prisoner played by Danny Trejo.
Yeah, who has one line and then gets blown the fuck away.
It's one of his first movies. This was back when he was still doing, when he was a guy who was doing technical advising for criminals, because he had gotten out of prison. He's doing technical advising, and they eventually said, why don't we put you in the background? You look legit. He's like, because I fucking am legit.
Yeah, I've been there.
This is one of his first roles.
Also in Maniac Cop 2, hilariously playing almost this exact same role of other guy in cell.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have, of course we do, because it's the 80s and it's a fucking New Line movie, Lin Shaye walks on. And Lin Shaye has a couple of lines.
Lin Shaye, who was married to Bob Shaye, who was the head of New Line, who, I mean, is kind of a Roger Corman figure himself, because there's as many stories about Bob Shaye really launching careers as there are Bob Shaye being a complete dickbag. Mm-hmm. Depending on who you talk to, you will hear some interesting stories about Bob Shaye. But his wife, Lynn, is in almost every New Line movie that he produced, including the original Nightmare on Elm Street,
yeah,
where she plays the teacher.
And of course, you those of you right now going, wait, who's Lynn Shaye? Why would I know her? You know her from the Insidious movies as the psychic.
Yes, and she's fucking amazing. And
she is.
She's always great in every movie that she's in. I want to give a special shout out to Claudia Christian in this movie, playing the stripper Brenda. Because she is really asked to take on a lot in this movie, because she has to play sort of a throwaway sex symbol type of character in the strip club who ends up getting inhabited by the alien and turns on that dime and really, I think she more than anybody else really like allows herself to be submersed in this kind of alien persona. Like, I love the interaction she has with kind of the street hood that comes up to her and is trying to put the moves on her, and you see ever so subtly, you see her make the same movement with her tongue that the previous two inhabitants did. And then she has this like really wry little smile where she takes the guy to a car, and it sounds like sex at first, and then you realize she's actually killing him. And it's so fucking perfect. And I don't know, I can't confirm this because I didn't see it actually on the IMDb, but I'm pretty sure the other Hood in that scene is David Paymer.
That I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's David Paymer. It looks exactly like David Paymer. And if it's not David Paymer, it's somebody who should make a career out of being a David Paymer impersonator, if that's a thing you could possibly be, because that's exactly who he looks like. So we're tracking this all the way through. The alien's kind of moving from person to person. This leads to a great shootout at a mannequin factory between McLaughlin and Nori, and of course Claudia Christian with the alien inside of her.
Which sounds like a really gross porn.
It really does. But you see Kyle MacLachlan pull out this space age looking gun, and she's like, you know, I'm not afraid. You can't stop me now. And then literally runs and crashes through the sign. This reminds me again, like the stunt work in this reminds me again of Maniac Cop 2, because this stunt actually a stunt woman dives through a neon sign, and it's one shot, dives through a neon sign and does a full front flip. Has to be three stories onto an airbag, but holy fuck, is that a great stunt. And so we see that happen, and then we see, for some reason, the other lieutenant, played by Clarence Felder, brings his dog to crime scenes. Not like a German Shepherd who is also a deputized police officer, just a fucking, his personal dog comes to the crime scene with him and gets inhabited by the alien, which again, we're ripping off the Thing a little bit.
Yeah, no, we definitely are. But with that particular moment, that leads to, this is where this movie really does borrow heavily from a number of things, but then it does what you're supposed to do. It gives back. It does something that we've never seen before. When the dog gets inhabited, we see the dog sitting and staring at its own reflection in the mirror, mm-hmm. just as the alien has every other time it turns in.
Yes.
And it's just such a cool moment where it's like, of course, that like they sell that this in that one shot, they sell the dog is the alien. And this is still the same character. It's just in a dog now. And then when the dog goes and kills its owner, it's kind of fucking crazy.
Well, yeah, and it kind of reminds me of that moment from The Simpsons where, like, Homer's pitching the idea that the dog is the killer, and Mel Gibson's like, wait, how are people going to know the dog is evil?
Yeah, shifty eyes.
Shifty eyes. There's a there's a shifty-eyed dog moment in this movie where the dog is literally staring at Kyle MacLachlan and, like, curls its teeth back, its lip back a little bit, and I'm like, that's your shifty-eyed dog moment right there. And this leads, of course, to a moment that you don't see very much in cinema, which is that a small terrier-like dog knocks out its owner by jumping on its back.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible that happens.
It's a very weird, cool stunt.
And speaking of Mel Gibson, I found this very interesting. Michael Norrie is only in this movie because he turned down the role of Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon.
You're shitting
me. I'm not. He picked this buddy cop movie over that buddy cop movie.
I'd rather work with Bob Shea than with Joel Silver.
Wrong call, bro. Wrong call, wrong call, wrong call, wrong call. I got more Ferraris. I got more Ferraris. I got more Ferraris. Yeah, I don't think he necessarily made the right career choice, but to listen to Jack Shoulder during the commentary, Michael Norrie was not apparently the easiest actor to work with, which might be why a lot of you are sitting at home right now going, who the fuck is Michael Norrie? I think he's really great, but I can completely understand why his career kind of went south. So basically what this leads to now is we've talked about it a lot. We talked about it with Terminator. We talked about it with Maniac Cop 2. The idea of the perfect assault on a police station. Those police station shootouts are, I think when you do it right, it is really interesting and really fun and really cool and really dramatic. And I think this is actually a really good assault on a police station where we see one of the lieutenants, the one who brought his dog to the crime scene, is now inhabited by the alien. They've taken Kyle MacLachlan into custody because he seems to know a lot more than he's letting on. And they find out, wait a minute, this agent from the FBI, according to their records, because apparently nobody did this when he first showed up at the station, Lloyd Gallagher died in a fire, in a forest fire. So how is he here and walking around? So they lock him up, they put him in a cell, and here comes the alien inhabited body of Lieutenant Masterson, who's trying to kill him, and we have an assault on a police station that I don't think is quite on the level of Terminator Maniac Cop 2, but is really fucking good.
No.
It works really well.
It does. It does. It's a very interesting sequence, and it sets up the ending properly. Although the one thing I think is really ham-fisted in this movie, the one moment I think it's...
Oh, you cannot do a kosher fist bump with this movie. It's super ham-fisted.
No, it is early on in the scene when somebody's like, hey, check this out. What is it? It's a flamethrower.
I believe that is referred to as Chekhov's flamethrower.
It is Chekhov's flamethrower so that we can set up that we can use the flamethrower for this scene at the end. Which admittedly is really fucking great.
It is, because all of a sudden the movie stops being The Thing and starts being They Live.
Yeah.
Where it's like, now the aliens are going to take over politicians and start informing policy, and we can't let that happen. And so what this leads to is a different detective played by Edo Ross, who I know best because I watched Dick Tracy a lot as a kid.
Yeah, you did.
And he plays Itchy in Dick Tracy, but he's an actor who's been in a lot of stuff too. He plays another detective that earlier in the movie, I think this movie does a really good job of establishing a camaraderie between the detectives in this small precinct. So we see Ed Ross's character, Detective Willis, get inhabited by the alien as well. And you're like, oh, shit. So Beck and Gallagher are headed off because they realize that Detective Willis is going after... is going after a guy who is a senator. Senator Holt, who's going to be running for president. That's his plan. And the alien decides, literally, because the alien again is like a teenage boy, so it has very little id control, but it's also not very well spoken. So there's literally a scene where the alien inhabits this senator who wants to be vice president or wants to be president, and just says to a room full of people, I want to be president. Kind of like, I want this car, or I want this music, or, you know, like, it is literally not a well thought out argument. It's just a lack of id control. I want to be president. And so the movie at this point becomes trying to stop this alien. And apparently in the original script, the alien that's inhabiting the senator at the end of the movie just flies away. And that's the end of that story, which is kind of open-ended and eerie. But in this movie, in this version, we can't let that happen. We can't end with any kind of ambiguity. So Kyle MacLachlan's just going to run into the press conference with a fucking flamethrower and burn this senator alive.
Yes.
And that's what happens.
And it's a great burn.
Such a great burn.
And then, of course, we get the alien crawling out of the mouth. And then we get the death of the alien, and it's all really great. Like that sequence, you know, watching Kyle MacLachlan get shot to shit by a bunch of people and then flamethrowering it and then seeing everyone's reaction to it. It's a really great moment, and it is well worth any of the silliness that leads up to it. Cause it's just such a badass fucking sequence.
Yeah, and that's kind of what this movie has moments where it's as brazen as I Come in Peace, but then there are moments like the end of this movie. The very end of this movie, call it silly, call it over the top, but I was actually really moved by it. So during the course of the proceedings, Detective Beck, played by Michael Norrie, is actually shot up by the other detective, played by Etta Ross, who's inhabited by the alien. And he is lying in a coma fighting for his life. And Kyle MacLachlan comes in and makes his own kind of transfer of life force. It's not the same as
the other alien.
The other alien who is referred to as... Is he an Altairian or is Kyle MacLachlan an Altairian? Because he has a line when he's inhabiting the body of the other lieutenant where he says... Altairians are filthy people. It's, you know,
no, they're talking about the last planet they were on. The last planet they ran into each other on, he was in the body of of the Altarians, and he hates the Altarians.
Well, I say that because you get the sense in this movie that whatever this alien is inhabiting people and making them criminals is a different species than whatever Kyle MacLachlan is. Because Kyle MacLachlan will, you know, take damage and kind of heal from it, whereas the alien inhabiting people to make them be criminals, those bodies get used up and he has to find a new one. And not only that, but this scene, Kyle MacLachlan comes into Michael Norrie's hospital room and kind of breathes golden light into him, which makes him wake up from the coma and still be himself, and Kyle MacLachlan dies. So it's more of a sacrifice than a possession.
Yeah, but I'm of the opinion that they're actually the same race, that they're the same thing, that they're not two separate races, that, well, that they can just do different things.
Interesting.
This other thing is a selfish killer who kills everyone, you know, that killed Kyle MacLachlan's partner, you know, that doesn't respect life at all. Just possesses things. And that's not who Kyle MacLachlan is. He is somebody who respects the sanctity of life and is trying to protect it, and realizes that everything that he finished everything that he was living for. He's lost his family, he's lost his friend, he is on a completely different world, probably with no way home. Here is this guy who's a good guy with a family that he loves very much, who has, you know, done a lot for him, and he sacrifices himself for him and is like, all right, it's over. I'll give you this life force because you sacrificed yourself for my quest.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does that. But I'm very much of the opinion that they're the same species.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But I think it was really cool. They set up this moment earlier where Kyle MacLachlan, when he's having dinner at Michael Norrie's house and meets Michael Norrie's daughter, they have this weird sort of connection, and Kyle MacLachlan ends up telling Michael Norrie, your daughter's very special. And you don't it's a little creepy at the time because you're not really sure where he's going with that, but you get the sense that she sees Kyle MacLachlan's character for what he really is. She has some kind of sixth sense about where he comes from and what's going on with him, that comes back at the end of the movie when Michael Norrie wakes up, and the very last thing you see before credits is him kind of reaching out and holding hands with his daughter, who looks very apprehensively at him, like she knows that he's been brought back by Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really sweet moment that, again, illustrates the difference between I Come in Peace and the movie like The Hidden, where they're both over the top, they're both a little ham-fisted, they're both very action-centric, but I feel like The Hidden is shooting for a level of heart and a level of sort of philosophical weight that I Come in Peace isn't interested in.
Yeah.
And whether or not The Hidden hits those marks, it is striving for them in a way that I think is really fascinating to watch. And I also think this movie is shot really well. Like even the minor crane shots are really interesting in the way that they are like stacking cop cars and the way that, like I said, well, this
there's
before,
several car chases in this
the
movie.
The car chases, like I said before,
they're
are
good
just
car chases,
and you can tell like the French Connection's a big influence on Jack Sholder.
Well, yeah,
because he shoots a lot of the car chases where the camera's either mounted on the car or from inside the car, and it's just quick cut between, you know, being to make you feel like you're actually in the car that's engaged in the chase. But I think those moments really work, and I think it's interesting that you have these solid character beats with really strong actors who, you know, some of whom haven't really gotten their due and are relegated to, you know, guys like us sitting on a couch and drinking beer and talking about.
Yeah.
But doesn't change the fact that they are very accomplished at what they're doing. And I think that these movies make a really interesting double feature, but they're not the exact same movie.
No, no.
And again, I feel like there's a lot that's borrowed from They Live. There's a lot that's borrowed from The Thing, right down
to... Well, this movie definitely wanted to be a Carpenter movie.
Oh, 100% wanted to be a Carpenter movie, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but it's literally ripping off two completely different Carpenter movies at once. and you know, throwing in some late 80s action horror stuff. And I am I'm a little shocked that this movie.
I need to step in.
Do for it.
1 second, because you're pulling a boner, and I got to call an audible.
Okay.
They Live came out in 88.
Oh, that's a good point.
You cannot rip off a movie. That's that has true. You cannot precognitively rip off a movie. So technically,
yes,
this is kind of doing it first. Like at first when you were talking about it, I thought you were talking about thematically, like when you said it then becomes They Live. And it's like, yeah, no, that's a great way to describe it. But now saying that
you're right. It didn't rip it off. But thematically, it does wander into They Live thematically. Not intentionally, obviously, because it came out first. But
however, it certainly rips off the fucking thing.
Oh, my God.
Once it goes into the dog, you're like, really? I'm in.
They even use like I said before, they even use the same sound effects, like that weird sort of like whatever that sound is that sounds like locusts or something like that. And I love the stop motion effect of this thing literally crawling out almost like tentacle by tentacle out of this thing, this guy's mouth into the other guy. Really fucking phenomenal effect. And I love the fact that it's delving into 80s Coke culture in a way that's like, what does it mean to be human? Well, if you happen to land in LA in the 80s, it means that you're a coke addicted douchebag who only wants to, you know, it's like if an alien came down and inhabited the body of a Miami Vice villain.
Yeah.
That's what this movie is. And it's about the two cops. It's a Miami Vice episode with aliens where the two cops are trying to track down whatever the fuck is going on and who these bad people are. And, you know, it is interesting to watch Kyle MacLachlan just not give a shit about trying to explain things to Michael Norrie because he's already figured out what's going on and he's trying to track down this other alien. So Michael Norrie is always two steps behind Kyle MacLachlan trying to catch up.
But he's also two steps behind the audience.
Yes.
We know what's up.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's true. We actually literally know before the other. It's very Hitchcock. We know before the other characters in the movie what the fuck is going on. So it's really more of a suspense than it is a mystery. But it's got some great action, some really great character work. And yeah, Jack Shoulder had a really interesting career between, you know, as we said before, directing Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which we talked about a little bit actually on our last episode where we talked about Friday the 13th 7, because this is the kind of movie algebra that we do. We're talking about Friday 7 and we talk about Nightmare 2 in the process.
And just let me throw in an extra factor to that. One of the cameos we did not mention that's in this is a guy named Ted White. Ted White plays one of the other police officers in the station, and also played Jason in Friday the 13th Chapter 4. The final chapter.
And also, Clue Gulager's in Nightmare 2.
He is.
So, yeah, you've got a lot of connections like that. But it's, I mean, Alone in the Dark, coming out of the gate with a movie like Alone in the Dark in the 80s, so fucking phenomenal. Nightmare 2 is debated and argued to
this day.
It's
coming back around. Like, it's getting a following where it's a movie that aged significantly well in terms of its context, where 30 years ago people rejected it because it seemed homoerotic, and now people are looking at it going, oh, it's not homoerotic, it's actually a metaphor for dealing with homosexuality and trying to come out. That this is all this intentional metaphor wrapped in horror, that's actually really cool. So people are really having different responses to it as a result.
Which is interesting. And I think one of the things I wanted to talk about to wrap up this discussion was, how would you remake this movie? Because so much of it, like we've said before, is about figuring out what it means to be human in the specific time and place that you've landed on Earth. So at this time, we're talking about coke. We're talking about, you know, excess in terms of money. We're talking about the 80s. If you were going to remake this movie now, how would you do it so that what you were reflecting is an alien struggling with what it means to be human in this particular place and time? And the thing that I was thinking about was, what if the alien was attracted to the idea of celebrity? And not necessarily movie stars, television personalities, but attracted to the idea that you could be a celebrity for no reason. So you have an alien who's attracted to the idea of, you know, like, you know, these YouTube stars and these reality show stars and like trying to be famous without understanding, because it works on two levels, because I feel like trying to be famous without understanding the hard work that should go into being famous not only translate to somebody from another planet, but some of the people who are actually famous. So I feel like you could have this alien coming down and inhabiting the bodies of people who are famous for reasons that we can't put our finger on, because if we as inhabitants of this planet can't define it and can't quantify what that means, it's going to be even harder for somebody from another planet. But that idea could be so attractive that that's kind of the circles it could move through.
That's an interesting way to go about it. In looking at it, one of the things that I would think of and what the movie would lend itself to is not only what is it to be human in the terms of human desires, but what it is to be human and try not to be seen, try to be invisible.
It's almost the exact opposite.
Yeah. The notion that we are watched 24/7, that if the minute you leave your house, you're getting photographed, whether it's by satellites, whether it's by, security cameras outside stores, inside stores. Whenever you do something, people have cameras in their pockets. You can live stream Periscope, events as they happen, to the rest of the world. How does an alien addicted to these extremes steal bodies and get away with it and avoid being caught in this era? I think that would be an interesting tact of going about it, because how do you do that? You know, you go off the grid, but when you go off the grid, you no longer have access to all that great stuff that you're here for. So I think that would be an interesting, you know, watching how that alien does that would be interesting.
There would be. And I think one of the things, again, to take away from this is that it's a really cool concept that is played out in a lot of the trappings of, you know, 80s B movies, all of the things that make exploitation great, all of the things that please our ids. But at the same time, I think there is a real attempt here to delve deeper into the story and to the character moments and to explore that idea of, I love the relationship between Kyle MacLachlan and the alien that he's tracking, because they are so similar, and yet Kyle MacLachlan's really very much on the other side of things and understands right from wrong, whereas this alien that's making people commit crimes has no concept of right and wrong. And I also wanted to point out that the writer of this movie, Jim Koff, or Koff, I may be saying that incorrectly, was a guy who's had an ongoing career, and written some really interesting things. Like, he wrote Stakeout, he wrote Rush Hour, he wrote National Treasure, like just a lot of
big hits.
A lot of big hits. And this movie was, I believe it was kind of a reasonable hit, but it wasn't anything that, it's not even the size of hit where you've seen a decent release of this movie.
No, there has not been a decent release.
I bought, quick story, I bought the DVD of this from a Hollywood Video when it was going out of business and I was picking the carcass clean. And the DVD is one that you literally have to pick between. When you start it up, it says, do you want full screen or widescreen? That's how old the DVD is, that you literally get to pick between, you know, full frame or widescreen. And the sound is so fucking terrible, and it just looks like shit. And I am begging Scream Factory, at this point, I'm convinced you're listening to this show, so I'm going to put it out there. Please release a decent Blu-ray of this movie.
Oh, this writer is phenomenal and has a great history of stuff. This is one of those guys who's been working for the last 35 years. 37 years, actually, it looks like. But some of his great ones include Class from 83, Up the Creek, which is a really, really interesting middle of the road sex comedy from the mid 80s, from 84, that I think we may talk about at some point. You mentioned Stakeout. He did Disorganized Crime. He did Operation Dumbo Drop.
That is also a thing that is true, yes.
It's also a thing that happened. And of course, you know, Rush Hour, because it's fucking Rush Hour.
Isn't Gang Related the movie that everybody calls Tupac's best movie? Isn't that Gang Related, or am I thinking of a different movie?
It might be.
I want to say that's the movie that everybody talks about as being Tupac's best movies. Tupac and Jim Belushi, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, a guy, you're right. A guy who's had a very interesting career, and a guy who's actually...
had a movie come out just last year, Money Monster.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. And has had a very successful career as a producer as well, producing things like Con Air. And so, yeah, like, so it's just interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting collection of people, a lot of whom have... celebrated appearances on Junk Foods. Well, they haven't celebrated. We've celebrated their appearances on Junk. They don't get like Google.
Nobody
alerts.
Gets excited when we talk about them on Junk Foods.
Except
Cinema.
Scream Factory. I'm fucking saying it again. I swear to God, it happens. It's been pointed out. At first, I thought, no, it's a coincidence. But the more people on Twitter pointed it out to me, I'm like, no, this is crazy. Like, something's going on. Like, every time we talk about a movie, they're releasing Band of the Hand, they're releasing Never Too Young to Die, and just on and on and on, and all these movies we talked about.
That's
I'm like
two movies.
No, there's more. There's more. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. People have tweeted this shit at me every time it happens, and it's happened a lot.
You think it's over now? You're wrong.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing. And I don't know if you guys even remember this, but there was a trend for a while where kids could buy chocolate eggs, and they just look like chocolate eggs, but when you started eating into them, inside the chocolate egg was a prize. It was either like...
Well, there's Kinder Eggs.
Kinder Eggs, yes.
Which are illegal here in the United States.
Kinder Eggs, yes. I like the fact that they're illegal in the United States. There was a version of that in the States for a while.
Yeah, no, and in fact, 20 years ago, this was big with candy instead of toys, mm-hmm. where you'd have a Armageddon put one out where as a movie tie-in where you could buy a chocolate asteroid and you bit into it and it had all this... candy inside.
And then you bit into it and there was nothing inside because that movie's hollow. But Kinder Eggs...
It is hollow, but it had candy inside. And Armageddon's fucking awesome. You will not disparage...
Oh, I will.
You will not.
I will.
The one, fucking of these, rock one of these roller. Days, we, you and I need to do an episode, take a drink, everybody, on the Criterion cut of Armageddon.
Yes, Criterion. Criterion can put out Armageddon, but we can't get a decent Blu-ray of The Hidden. I don't understand this world. I don't understand what it means to be human. But much like the characters in this movie, these Kinder Eggs look like one thing on the outside, but when you start delving into them, there is something very different on the inside. Something hidden, you might say. A surprise waiting for you just underneath the surface. So Kinder Eggs, as illegal as they are, which actually ties into the fact that these this alien forces people to do illegal things once it inhabits them. So Kinder Eggs is this week's junk food pairing, and I'm waiting for Cargill to tell me the other or the more correct junk food pairing this week. No?
No.
All
I,
right.
Like I think Kinder Eggs are great. I Yay! Think, you know, I can't there's no iconic food in this movie, you know.
That's very true, actually.
Which is so weird for the 80s because you would think in an 80s movie about an alien there would be something where he would just be like, I just can't eat enough, get enough hot dogs. I fucking love these things.
Yeah, the only thing we see him eating is like a greasy spoon steak.
Yeah.
Which to me is not even junk food. That's just a good meal.
That's just breakfast.
That's like, substantial.
Yeah, you and I have spent many a night getting some steak and eggs at Jim's.
I wanted to
which,
say,
by the way, I needed to mention. I was just at Jim's. Jalapeno skillet gravy's back.
Shut the fuck up.
Jalapeno skillet gravy is back at Jim's.
Oh my God! Can I tell you? I'm going to tell you a quick fast food story. because fuck it. So I don't
jalapeno skillet gravy.
Jalapeno skillet gravy. I'm going to leave right from here and go eat that. But I was at a McDonald's drive-through because McDonald's has breakfast all day, which I think is the greatest invention of all time. See our discussions of Jim's.
Except that it's not their true breakfast all day. You can only get limited items.
They've actually expanded it a little bit to the point that the only thing I ever get is available all day, which makes me happy.
Well, I was always happy with it because what I would, you know, my go-to is the sausage McMuffin with egg.
See, mine is the sausage biscuit with egg, and that's what I ordered from this particular McDonald's. Now, never mind the fact, by the way, this episode clearly not brought to you by McDonald's today. Never mind the fact that I had to repeat my order three times. Never mind the fact that it's one of those stupid McDonald's where the window has a cling on it so you can't see if someone's in there or not. And they just said, pull up to the window. So I had to sit there for like 3 minutes waiting for somebody to come out before the person at the next window leaned their head out the window and was like, come down to this one. So fine, whatever. I put up with all these annoyances. I ordered a sausage biscuit with egg. It's what I always get. I never get anything else for breakfast at McDonald's. They finally give it to me. I pull away. I'm down the road. I pull in to eat it. I open it up. There's no fucking sausage in it. It is an egg and cheese biscuit, which is not even a fucking thing that they offer. How do you just forget to put the meat in the sandwich? I lost my mind a little bit to the point that my fiance was like, are you going to be okay? Because usually the heart attack happens after you eat the food and it looks like you're about to have one before. So I don't know how we got on that subject other than
we were
talking about.
I don't know how that you...
We're talking about breakfast food. And I
no,
think that,
what it is I know how you got on that subject because jalapeno skillet gravy, which comes on top of a sausage biscuit.
Oh, that's what it is. And also when I opened my sandwich, hidden inside was nothing. Nothing was hidden inside this sandwich. Anyway, if you would like to continue to hear us rant about breakfast foods as well as Cult B Cinema, you can always follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema or like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. Find our back catalog on iTunes and Stitcher. Please leave those reviews and give us those 5-star ratings. We really do appreciate that. If you really like the show, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. Now, I cannot stress to you guys enough, we are on the cusp of announcing something really big, not only for the upcoming series, but also something specifically for subscribers that I think is going to blow your mind. You're going to really love it. So consider becoming a patron.
Now I want to know what it is.
Oh, you know what it is. You know exactly what it is. Come on now. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM, on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm. Or this, since this is going up here in the next few days, if you live in the Chattanooga area, I am in Chattanooga this weekend. I get there on Thursday night for the Chattanooga Film Festival. There, I am there all weekend. I am there to drink and watch movies and talk to fellow cinemaphiles. So if you guys are in Chattanooga, please go to the Chattanooga Film Festival. At the very least, help support this growing, great film festival. And then come and have a beer with me. And we'll sit and drink beer. I have not been able to drink beer for 2 months because of a diet. My diet ends today. So tonight it's jalapeno skillet gravy. And all weekend I get to have beers with the likes of you guys and talk movies. And I've seen some of the movies playing at Chattanooga. There is some fantastic stuff there this weekend. It is well worth your time. So I hope to run into some of you guys.
Nice. And just to remind you again, this episode is brought to you by Fun Size Horror. So if you're a filmmaker looking for a place to share your film and grow your audience, go to funsizehorror.com, a free online platform for original and user submitted horror shorts. And thank you again to patron Anna Slaughter for recommending. And if you're not familiar
and for being a patron.
For being a patron. If you would like to, he is actually a patron at the lofty $25 level, which we offered, if you were going to pledge at that level, that we would let you recommend the movie. We didn't think anybody would actually do it, but this is not the first time we've actually done a patron requested movie. So clearly people are doing it and we very much appreciate it. Thank you for keeping the lights on and helping us pay our bills. Until next time, I want to warn you guys to watch out for what's lurking just below the surface, or just watch out for Kyle MacLachlan in general. He seems like kind of a weird dude.